It's extra time.
He shoots, and it's a goal!
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by Sam Obaseki. Is this your first time on the podcast, Sam?
I think this is my third time maybe, but my first time during quarantine, so this is a different experience.
Yeah, it is. And today we are going to be talking about what is clearly the most important topic we've ever spoken about, which is racism in football. Now, obviously, we expect that everybody will have seen the global protests. And this time, it feels different. In the past, we've obviously seen large protests before, but sometimes they've been principally confined to the USA, or they've only centered on that particular act of violence. But this time, we've seen a worldwide movement really retain its momentum. So as well as protests against police brutality and negligence, we're also seeing it linked to the conversation about white privilege and people examining their own racial biases, their own privilege. And there are loads of important petitions that we're seeing popping up online, not just about justice for people like Shukri Abdi and George Floyd, but also about proposals to change GCSE reading syllabuses, to change the way that history is taught in our schools to reflect this country and other countries' histories with slavery, colonialism and imperialism. Now, obviously, we don't expect today that we're going to be able to talk to you about race in every country overall. So what we wanted to do today is take a moment as members of the community of football fans to examine racism in football and the role that it can play in combating racism in larger society. Because I think often there are parts of the country where people's major exposure to people of other races is through sport.
Yeah,
there are people who, for instance, might not go to a school with other people, with people of other races, but if they support football, their club will have players of other races on it. And as a result, I think that it should be a really important tool for awareness. Sam, obviously this is like a global political issue. And while we always see people say like, oh, sport should stay out of politics, it seems to me like it's completely natural and right that sport uses its voice for this cause. So how have we seen football respond to what we'd have to say is an ongoing crisis in the treatment of Black, Asian and minority ethnic people by white majority countries?
Well, I think it's quite interesting now that the amount of support, like you said, that football is showing the Black Lives Matter movement. Since the beginning of the Premier League now, they've put Black Lives Matter in place of the players' names. They've got a badge on the side. All the commentators have got a badge also. And during all of the interviews with all of the players and managers, there's always a question regarding that the situation. And I feel like bringing light to the issue is so important, because it's not a political issue, it's a human rights issue. And I feel like with the George Floyd incident, because it happened during a pandemic where so many people are able to see what's going on online and what's going on in other countries, I feel like it just kind of affected people a bit more. And especially Black people, there was a sense of being fed up and being tired of the fact that during this pandemic, especially, we've had to see news outlets and statistics saying that Black people are more likely to die from the pandemic. So that's gonna have people worried in general. And then there were so many situations with the police, police brutality against Black people, not just in the US, but also in the UK. It may not be with guns and violence, but just the stopping of people and the way people are treated by the police, it's raised so much awareness. And the fact that the Premier League are now saying, okay, cool, we've got a platform and we're gonna bring and shed as much light as possible to the problem is such a big thing. It's such a big thing.
It feels like in the past it's, well, I was going to say in the past, it's mostly been players having to do this. And that has always struck me as wrong. Like, you do see players taking knees or players revealing messages under their shirts. But does it seem to you like leagues and clubs and organisations have done enough? Because it does feel a little bit like it's putting pressure on people who are most affected by these issues to solve these issues, which seems completely unjust.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's because of how it used to look and the way they tried to make racism seem like it was a political issue, it was kind of hard for these organisations to get involved and really have a voice. But I think now with the confidence and the strength that the black players are showing, like Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, and even some of the pundits like Ian Wright and Chris Kamara talking about their situations and talking about the experiences that they've been through personally, I think in a time like this, it would be wrong for organisations like the Premier League and the FA to just say, OK, cool, you guys are going through it. We're just going to leave you hanging. They need to show support, and they need to show that if you're going to take part in football or you're going to be a part of punditry, it's not, you're not just being used for your talent. Like, we care about you. We care about the prejudice that you face on a day-to-day. And the fact that so many more people are coming forward to speak on it is spreading the message further than it ever has, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also, I'm glad that there are people like Dion Dublin saying, the shirts are nice, but the shirts are not the thing. Mm. You know, that's not what's going to change things here. So Raheem Sterling was pointing this out the other day, right, where he was saying that, like, there is a difference in the way that black ex-players who want to become coaches and white ex-players who want to become coaches are treated. So Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard finished illustrious playing careers, went and got their coaching badges, and then went on to high-level coaching jobs immediately.
Yeah.
Whereas people like Sol Campbell and Ashley Cole, who had very similar standing as players, have had to start much, much further down the coaching pyramid.
Mm.
Like, do you think that football does enough to get more black people black and minority ethnic people into positions of power in football?
I don't think they do. And I think the biggest problem with that is that they try to bunch all of the ethnicities into one. They try to bunch black, Asian, any other race into that small group. So the fact that in the process they can be saying, okay, cool, we're going to fill at least one spot with a person of BAME heritage, that's not good enough. Like, and I understand that they think that given that one opportunity is good, but at the same time, there's so many black people, there's so many Asian people, there's so many Indian people that are in these positions that want the opportunity, but because they've given one spot to that group of thousands, it's like, yeah, we're trying, but for me, it's not enough. And like you said earlier, with the fact that Sol Campbell and Ashley Cole have been kind of overlooked with positions that Steven Gerrard and the likes of Lampard have been able to get fast-tracked to, people aren't really asking for them to overtake them or get better opportunities. It's just simply the same level of opportunity. And the biggest thing with that is that they all come from the same background. They've played football for years. They've trained for years. They're showing that they want to get into coaching. And the biggest thing for me is that obviously there's always going to be people saying that they haven't got enough experience at the top level and things like that. But Sol Campbell and Ashley Cole have the exact same experience as Gerrard and Lampard, or just less now. So it's like, what is the sole reason for you to not give them the opportunity? And obviously there'll always be a political answer, or maybe their relationship with their head or the CEO is different or whatever. But at the same time, they need to look at these things and look at the ripple effect it has on people that are coming up, black players that will want to get into coaching or black members of staff that will want to go for those senior jobs, but already see that there's a roadblock in front of them and see that the hurdle is going to be so much harder for them to jump than their white counterparts. So it's like, if they're seeing these problems, it's gonna demotivate them to even go for those roles. So there needs to be so much more done within all of these football teams and all of these organisations around football to make sure that there's representation in of every ethnicity, not just black, not just Asian, not just any other ethnicity, but all of them. There needs to be enough representation for everyone so that everyone can feel represented and not left out.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, there have been some small measures taken, but they've been very limited and not really enforced, right? So the EFL this season adopted the Rooney Rule, which obviously fans of American sports will know about, where essentially at least one BAME candidate has to be interviewed for a head coaching job. The problem is the hiring processes in football tend to be really weird, right? Mm. So 70% of coaches across the EFL were hired mid-season, which meant that clubs didn't do a thorough recruiting process and they didn't have to create a shortlist. And if they don't have to create a shortlist, they don't have to prove that they are assessing candidates from all different ethnicities.
Yeah.
And as a result, they can get away with ignoring the Rooney Rule. And to make matters even worse, the Premier League didn't subscribe to the Rooney Rule, which is a small step and it's not enough. But it is better than nothing. And I think sometimes there is this attitude, right, of like, well, that little thing isn't going to solve it. That little thing isn't going to solve it. And so therefore people disregard everything rather than thinking, if we do all these things, then we are making steps towards greater racial justice.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. People aren't asking for the solution tomorrow. Like, we're not asking, because this is decades and years of systematic, let's say systematic racism to a certain extent, but systematic prejudice, yeah? And it's like, tomorrow you might say, okay, cool, the Rooney Rule is now in place where there's one person. But then the next day you can say, okay, cool, we're gonna increase that and increase the numbers of BAME representatives in the managers. And that's steps forward. But the thing that I feel like a lot of these organisations that have struggled with is the fact that they think that there can be one solution for this problem. There's not one solution. It's an ongoing thing, and that's why it's so good that the conversation is continuing, because it's making us realize how many areas that we actually have to improve in.
Yeah, because you think people are not going to get to the managerial positions unless they get the coaching positions. And there was a study done in 2017 which looked at BAME representation among coaches below like top coach level, so like first team coaches and just basically like elite staff across the EFL, and I think they said that 22 people out of 482 came from black, Asian or minority ethnic backgrounds, which is 4.6% compared to 14% in the general population, which just seems absolutely insane. Because like, even if you can argue, okay, well, the number of people who have the qualification to go and immediately be manager of Man United is very small.
Yeah.
Though, of course, that is as well determined by a bunch of like racialized factors. That's not true for first team coaches. Like, clubs can hire lots of first team coaches and give people experience. They can give it to who they want.
And that's the thing. They need to realize that there's so many, especially in London, like from what I've seen, there's so many black players coming through the system. And If I'm a black player and I'm looking at my coaching staff and I'm not seeing anyone represent me, it's already a harder environment for me to get in, because the biggest thing now is when you see someone that is this a similar colour to you, or is the same colour as you, you kind of get a sense that they understand you a bit further. So it's better for every player that is represented in the team to have someone that they can go to or someone that they can speak to that understands the struggle, understands things that they've been through. And without that factor, it just leaves a bigger gap for players being misunderstood, to the media, to the coaching staff, to so many people in that higher up organisation. And it's just like, they need to take a step back. And even in the conversations that they're having in terms of making significant change, they need to have the representation in those meetings. Because a lot of the problems now is that the conversations that they're having with, let's say, the head of the FA or the head of football or Premier League is five white men or 10 white men. And it's like, you can't try to relate to the oppression that black people feel unless you have someone there present that can tell you, this is how this has made me feel, this is how this can be fixed, or this is how we can start making the change within our system.
Well, I think that actually relates as well to what we as fans can do, right? Which is that fans need to be making an effort now to understand the experiences that players go through. What do you think fans need to do more of? Where do you think fans can improve themselves or improve the part that they play in this process?
I'd say just educating themselves on, especially in the UK, systematic racism and how that plays a part on the subconscious, and the fact that you may not feel that you're being racist when you're saying to someone, oh, you see a tall black player, and even if he's got the most technical ability, you would be saying, oh, he's got a lot of pace, he's got a lot of power, or he's very strong in the air. And that might be true, but at the same time, you see that those terms used a lot with black players. And also, even going to stadiums and going to walk into the matches and things like that, there's been so many cases of racial crimes and racial things happening. And it's like, as an individual, you have to say, okay, cool. If there's so many situations happening, especially in one club, what can we do as fans to either speak to the club and say, we're not standing for this anymore because our right winger, our centre mid, our right back, our left back are black players, and we don't feel comfortable that you're sitting next to someone that is literally just abusing them because of the colour of their skin. It's going to be an effort that everyone needs to get involved in. And I feel like that's one of the biggest things why this is so different, because you're seeing white players speak out. You're seeing white managers speak out and saying, this is wrong. We shouldn't be doing this. If you're not speaking out against racism, then it looks like you're for it. Do you get what I'm saying? And that's never really been a conversation. So the fact that that now is being the main narrative, I feel like it gives people more pressure to a certain extent to speak out against it. And as fans, that's definitely something that we can do.
Yeah, that idea is so important, right? Like the idea that not being racist is not the same as being anti-racist.
Yeah.
Like going to a match and saying, well, I wasn't doing anything racist is not enough. And it's never been enough, but everyone's kind of pretended that it is. So a guy called Jonathan Liu, who's a sports journalist, wrote about this, where he said he's heard managers and members of club staff say things behind the scenes which were, in his view, racist. But nobody spoke up or said anything because they were worried that if they did, everyone would kind of maybe ban them from having access to that particular club, which happened to him when he criticised Leicester after Jamie Vardy racially abused a Japanese man in a casino.
Oh, wow.
I think that was back in 2016. Jonathan Liu mentioned this in a post he wrote, not even for a paper, but on Facebook, and ended up being banned from press conferences as a result. But similarly, I think there's this idea that people are oh, well, throwing a banana at a player is absolutely inexcusable. But then they sing songs about Park Ji-sung eating dogs, or they support a player from their club, Luis Suarez, when Liverpool support a player from their club, or they use that as an insult for another club. They say, oh, well, it's losing to Burnley or something. They're oh, how embarrassing for you that one of your players did something racist.
And that's the thing, even at that, the Suarez situation you just spoke of, it's at that point, if that happened today, it would be completely different. And that's kind of a good thing and a bad thing, because it kind of shows us how much we are oblivious to the support of systematic racism. The fact that Liverpool came out and said, oh, we're supporting Suarez during this period, and didn't think about what he had done and how it made Evra feel, how it made other black players feel, the fact that he got eight games banned or something like that. It's this is a real issue. And for a real issue, there needs to be more consequence. There needs to be either you don't finish the rest of the season, or, for example, for a player, for a fan, if you do that, a lifetime ban. Because you need to show that these offences do have consequences, and the consequences are high because that's how important we're taking it. And I feel like with what's going on now and so many people speaking out, those consequences will be worse for people that commit those crimes.
Yeah, because it feels like people don't... It often feels like with this stuff that the people who are against this sort of reform like immediately jump to the worst possible conclusion. You know, so they're like, oh, they all think they're about to be cancelled all the time. Yeah. And they all think that like everything's being stacked up against them. Whereas it feels like with this, you know, by saying not being racist is not the same as being anti-racist, that also cuts the other way, which is you can be an anti-racist and still have like unconscious biases and you're not pretending to be perfect by like committing to fight against racism, right?
Yeah.
What you're doing is saying, I know I need to improve and I want to help everything improve. Mm. And that seems to be a thing that football has so seldom done, where players are actually asked to like explain themselves and like to, and fans as well, to like to show that they are capable of improving. Like, I completely agree with you that like a lot of punishments need to be like sufficiently strong that there's a disincentive for anyone to ever behave that way again.
Yeah.
But I also feel like with things like this and with stuff like homophobia and sexism as well,
a form of education.
Well, and then players just need to kind of like, if a player came out and said, I said this thing years ago and I was disgusted with myself and I've made efforts to change and this is how I've educated myself.
Mm.
I think people would be quite open to that. Like, nobody's unreasonable here.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would respect that more because that's what it is. Realistically, at that point, they either thought it was right or it was okay to do what they'd done. And in apologising or in coming out and saying that is completely wrong, I'm either disgusted with myself or that is something that I will never like do again type of thing, it shows that the growth and it shows how important that they're taking the situation. But silence and then coming back out and playing as if everything's normal, it's like, have you really learned from what you did, or have you really understood the severity of your actions?
Mm. Yeah, this idea that like, oh, you can pay a fine or serve a ban and that's enough.
Yeah.
And that will just improve you as a person. Like, that's not that's not the way it works.
Mm.
Like, I mean, it's interesting as well, you talking about the pace and power thing, because I think this is an example of something that would never be allowed to go on if it weren't about black players.
Mm.
Like, I agree with what you were saying before about like the way that we need to look at representation for Asian people, for black people, and like not just treat essentially like, oh, there are white people and then there are other people. Mm. But there are really specific like forms of racial stereotyping which are applied again and again and again to black people, right, in football. Mm. So you and I have both tried to write one-on-ones about race in football. And the one I wrote was like in 2017. I've updated it a couple of times since then, but there's a bit in it where I searched for the new Vieira.
Yeah.
Just to see who came up. And I've literally got a list of like 25 players. And then they're players who are not, and they're all black players. They're all tall black players.
Mm.
And then shorter black players are likened to Makalele. And then since Conte's come along, they're likened to N'Golo Conte.
Mm.
I even found an article by an Arsenal fan about how Matteo Guendouzi, people were saying, he said, oh, I don't understand why people are saying Guendouzi could be our new Vieira. Our new Vieira could be Joe Willock mainly, maybe, or Ainsley Maitland-Niles. And it just feels like this is an example of something where when you say this is racist, people react to it really badly.
Mm.
But the comparison often has absolutely no basis, in fact, except in skin colour. That's the only thing that people can see.
Mm, and that's the thing. People don't really realise that there's different forms of racism. We're not saying that that's the worst type, or being compared to a black player is the worst type of racism. But it's just the fact that it's so subconscious that you don't realise that every black player that you do compare to Vieira is black. Like, every person that you do compare to Kante is black. They said Keita, even though he doesn't really play like him, is the new Kante. And I'm sure any other smaller player that comes through now, they're going to compare him to Kante because of his size and the way he moves. But at the same time, it's like, why can't you compare Torreira to Kante? Why can't you compare all of these other players to players of that are black? Because the only common denominator in the comparisons are their skin colour, and it's something that has happened throughout the years, so it's harder for people to really acknowledge. But I feel like even with podcasts like this and people coming out and saying, oh, you're only comparing me because we share the same skin colour, we'll educate people more. And that's the main thing about this whole movement. It's about education. A lot of people don't really realise how they unconsciously compare players or unconsciously think a player's got a bad attitude or doesn't care because they either dance too much or they're not
have a haircut
in a particular style. And it's like, my thing is, especially why it's so important to have representation in the coaching staff and in the management group of all these teams is like I said before, having people that understand these players, having people that have come from the same struggle as these players, so you can say, okay, cool, that's just a form of expression. That's just him expressing himself either online or expressing himself through his hair. And some white people may not understand that because they've never really had that lifestyle where the only form of expression that they could have growing up in the ghetto or whatever was through dancing or through the way they looked. And it's all about literally education. And I feel like with the conversation continuing, that will only be better for players of colour and everyone in general, to be honest.
Yeah. So education would be definitely like the cornerstone of like what we can do going forward, right, as football fans. But what other action do you think that we could be taking, that people should be taking?
Just calling out racism in general. Like, don't be afraid to say, if you're a white man or a white woman, to say, my colleague was racist to me because they thought that I was okay with what they were saying. And these situations there, it's like you have to make racism wrong. Like, you have to make every form of racism wrong. And and not saying anything enables these people to continue. Like, there's been so many scenarios recently online about people recording either police officers or just common people just walking by and that have had racist situations with black people. And once the video goes viral, their company gets involved. We don't stand by racism. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their office spaces and things like that. And it's like, these things are what's going to cause people to educate themselves and understand that this can't continue. And the fact that so many people are now recording these situations where they are victims of racist attacks or just the unconscious racism, like I said, being stopped because you're a black guy and you're in a nice car. Those situations, when those police officers get back to the office and their senior manager saying that you shouldn't have done that, this is what it's done for our organisation, they'll realise how important it is not to be racist and to have those unconscious biases. And also, I'd say just like we said earlier, the Rooney Rule, I wasn't actually made aware of that until before this conversation. And the fact that they've made a rule for these positions to be filled with BAME candidates, like, that's a step forward. Like, that's definitely a step forward. But at the same time, my thing is, like I said earlier, is that we need to still separate these people. We still need to separate black and Asians and all these other ethnicities, because if you group them together, it means you're grouping together their struggle, you're grouping together everything that they go through. And it's like, some areas may be similar, but it's not all the same. Do you get what I'm saying? And some Asian people can't relate to the prejudice that black people face, and likewise the other way around. So it's like, once you kind of try to make that group us all together, it's making your job harder in a sense, because if you separate it now and say, okay, cool, we're starting off now, we need to have these amount of black men in this position, we need to have these amount of Asian people in this position, we need to have these amount of white people in this position, that's when there will be fairer representation. And also, it won't be like a battle for black people to, okay, there's 10 black managers and there's only one role, one senior role, and everyone's going for that one role. And in a sense, it kind of puts them up against each other, and it shouldn't just be one role. Do you get what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
There should be much more and much more positions for them to fill.
Well, also there's the idea of like the international marketplace, right? Which is that like the only like BAME manager in the Premier League is Nuno Espirito Santo.
Mm.
The only like BAME manager in the Championship is like Sabri Lamouchi.
Mm.
And you're like, what you, if you're say like a like South Asian person from the UK who wants to become a coach,
mm.
like this idea that you can look at like Nuno as like your example of how you can make it seems ridiculous,
yeah.
because like you're from different countries, you have yeah. different backgrounds, you have different experience.
Mm.
Like it seems like one thing that the Premier League could do, because I don't know about you, but it's kind of like what Dion Dublin said, right? Which is like shirts are nice, but you just feel like people should put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah.
And like, and to me, like, I don't know if it's ever possible that like the UK government or the US government would seriously broach the topic of making reparations to like descendants of enslaved people.
Mm.
But the Premier League has built its global brand on black bodies, like on black excellence. And the least they could do then is invest money in like subsidizing coaching badges,
yeah.
for example, for ex-players who've come through the league,
yeah.
to say like, this is how we're going to make up for that.
Mm. And that's the thing, like once they do those things, I feel like a lot of players will feel more support and also more enthusiastic about their career after them playing. Because I know a lot of black players, I know quite a few players myself that are playing currently. And when you ask them about what they're going to do next, coaching and stuff, even though they might enjoy it, it's not really on the radar because of how, what they've seen happen to players before them. So it's like, once you allow these things to change, it motivates and inspires the next generation and the next generation after that. Like, so many of these players, like Sterling coming out and Rashford coming out and speaking about these things, that was never done before. Like, players were always told that you're a footballer, so you can't really say much, or you need to focus on football. But now people are realising these footballers have feelings, these footballers have emotions. The fact that we're in 2020 and black players are still victims of racial abuse by fans all over the world, like, there's a big problem. And I get having all of these campaigns like Kick It Out and things like that, but at the same time, like we said, that it's not just a campaign that's going to stop this. There needs to be things done behind the scenes where more black players or more ex-players are put into positions of real change, and also just educating ourselves and the people around us. And I feel like with that happening within the Premier League and within the FA and all of these footballing organisations, the more that is done, the better the future will be. Because we can't have another 50% increase of racial crimes within football fans. Like, it's got to reflect. If the FA and the Premier League are saying, we do not stand by this, and we're making sure behind the scenes and on the scenes that more is being done, the football fans won't. There's always going to be racist people. There's always going to be the people that are uneducated. But we should limit the amount of voice and the amount of coverage that they get. And with situations that have happened in the past, when they do say, now, okay, cool, you're getting a lifetime ban, those type of things will spark real change, and people won't speak out of something that they know is completely wrong.
Completely agree. Well, I think we'll have to leave it there, Sam. But I think this is definitely something where we have not spoken enough about on Football Daily and Euro Football Daily.
Mm.
And we definitely need to going forward.
And wait, sorry, but, can I just say one more thing? Because there was one thing that I'd completely missed. Yeah. And it was just another solution is like we're talking about with the pace and power and all of the connotations that are used around black players mainly, like those narratives have to change completely. Like, and I feel sometimes we've got that because I remember when Lukaku was getting a lot of abuse about having a pace and power, they were saying things like, oh, that's all he's good for, even though he was, let's say, the second top scorer in the league and things like that. Mm. It's like, if we, as, let's say, for example, presenters and hosts are able to point out these things and say to your colleague next to you, I don't think you should say that because it comes from a racial undertone or racial or something along those lines, then that's when real change can happen because people become more careful with what they're saying and become more careful with how the impact it has of what they say in terms of black players.
I think the white privilege in this sense can be used for anti-racist purposes, right? Which is that white people don't face any cost when they draw attention to these things.
Yeah.
And as a result, like, it is white people's responsibility to make sure they're speaking up when they see these things.
Mm.
Like, because that's just a simple matter of like striving for racial justice, I guess.
Mm. I think we just, as a collective, as a football nation, football world, we just all have to do better, like within ourselves and see areas where we can improve and improve the circles around us, because not everyone's going to be able to have the platform to speak to millions or thousands. But if you as an individual can say, okay, cool, I have fallen into these unconscious biases and I have compared a player like this to that person, it doesn't make you the worst type of person. Like, it doesn't make you the worst racist in the world or whatever. But at the same time, you've got to realise that where those things come from and how you can change as an individual. If everyone does that is in the football community and just in the world in general, that's where a lot of change will come, like looking within yourself and seeing where you can change.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today, Sam. It's always good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, is there anything that you think people should go and check out after this?
Well, they can go and check out the Black Lives Matter movement. There's literally a link. If you put that into Google, there's a link that will explain why, how, and what you can do to either educate yourself or support. There's also the picture in the background, that nice young man, the 56 Black Men campaign. That's literally, I joined that, I think, 2 years ago. And the main message of that campaign is to change the narrative of how black men are perceived in the media. So you can check them out as well. They're doing a lot of things behind the scenes in terms of getting a lot more black representation in the board meetings and on ground level, at every level. And apart from that, I'd just say everyone should just be happy, have a bit more empathy towards situations that you may not be able to relate to as well. I feel like with this movement, a lot of people a lot of people that oppose it are saying all lives matter and things like that. And we're not saying that at all. We're just saying that for this, the current climate, black lives are at more of a jeopardy in a sense, especially in the US. Mm. But in the UK, the systematic racism and the unconscious racism is issues that we have to solve together. It's not just you, it's not just us, we have to do it together, and that's how real change can come. But yeah, man, everyone stay happy.
Thanks, Sam, and thank you guys for listening or watching. Make sure that you're subscribed and we will see you again soon. Later. Thank you.
It's extra time.
He shoots and it's a goal.